congressional delegation and its two senators stand against impeachment. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, a look at the second Senate impeachment trial of former President Donald Trump. Let us know how you're reacting to this. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, efforts to rename local schools are underway, but a descendant of Jean Ribault joins us from France to say he and his relatives object to taking Ribault's name off two local schools. But first this hour, the latest numbers on the pandemic. The state reports that coronavirus cases increased overnight by a whisker above 7,000. We are closing in on 1.8 million cases. Now, active hospitalizations went down a bit, but deaths rose by 233. This is Governor Ron DeSantis visited Jacksonville yesterday to announce a new coronavirus vaccine partnership with Walmart Pharmacies. Some good news here. Beginning Friday, 18 Walmart stores in Duval County will begin distributing the vaccine, along with additional sites in Baker and Clay counties. Also, Southeastern Grocers has announced a list of its stores, including 9 Winn-Dixie and Harvey supermarket locations across the First Coast, that will begin offering vaccines for coronavirus later this week. And St. John's County has announced registration for additional vaccine appointments will open at 9 a.m. tomorrow. So we'll keep bringing you these updates about vaccine opportunities as soon as we hear of them. Meanwhile, the other big story this week, of course, is the second impeachment trial of Donald Trump. It has begun. And Senators Marco Rubio and Rick Scott drew attention yesterday. They were in attendance, but not really engaged in the proceedings. A book titled Vicksburg was spotted on Senator Scott's desk. Senator Rubio, according to others who watched him, said he stayed busy with papers. And so Florida's two senators, were fairly obvious about looking away from the proceedings, while the House managers prosecuting the case showed video of the violence at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. Of course, earlier, a majority of Florida's congressional delegation voted against certifying the Electoral College results on January 6th, even as insurrectionists were storming the Capitol building. Daniel Cronrath is professor of political science at FSCJ, and he's on the line now with some thoughts about how the impeachment proceedings are unfolding. Daniel, good to talk to you.
Hey, Melissa. Thanks for having me on today to talk about our latest constitutional crisis.
Right. Already receiving lots of tweets about the second impeachment of Donald Trump. Tweet us at Melissa N. Jax. Plenty of comments on Facebook. And let us know your thoughts about impeachment, the second impeachment of President Trump. 549-2937 to give us a call. Email us at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Okay, so this trial, Daniel, began with a jarring and graphic video of the riot at the Capitol on January 6th, and it was played on news broadcasts last night. The lead House manager, Representative Jamie Raskin of Maryland, used this video to tie Trump's message to his supporters that morning and then to their violent actions breaching the building and attacking U.S. Capitol Police. A majority of senators on the Republican side looked away from the video, and that includes our Florida senators, Marco Rubio and Rick Scott. Senator Rubio called the impeachment trial stupid, and he tweeted Tuesday that while the coronavirus threat deepens, the Senate is spending time in a trial of a former president. So Republicans are making the argument that it's not constitutional to carry out this second impeachment. What's your reaction to that argument?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, what does they classically say, Melissa, that when you're losing the case on its merits, that the only thing you can really try to do is argue procedure? And I think that obviously, you know, most constitutional scholars, most academics in the nation have already responded that, in fact, this is that the impeachment itself actually occurred while President Trump was in office, and that for the Senate trial to take place after President Trump has left office is, of course, a completely appropriate event under the Constitution. I think that the House managers yesterday, I think that Congressman Rankin made a very, very compelling case for that. You certainly, just because somebody leaves a job that they were at, Melissa, if they had committed an impropriety at that job, to suggest that now that they're at a different job or they're in their private life that they couldn't had those actions be held accountable for is certainly not something that the framers intended when they drafted the language and when, of course, we amended it with the 12th Amendment and so on moving forward. I think that for our own delegation here, for Senator Scott, for Senator Rubio, I think the only option, if they chose to stick by the president, quite frankly, based on day one, Melissa, the only option they had was to actually not look at the evidence because it was so compelling and it was so really damning of the events which took place that not to see that video and not to be moved and not to, again, you know, as just as an average American citizen, not necessarily as a journalist or a political scientist, but for me, and I know for a lot of my friends and my family and folks I talk to, those images coming out of our Capitol is just something we never could have imagined happening in the United States, Melissa. The violence, the fact that outside of just the violent images we saw, that knowing that there were five human beings who lost their life as a result of these events, I mean, that's more people than died in Americans who died in Benghazi, that we spent and the Republican Party spent how much time and how many dollars investigating for years. So I think the best way I would sum up day one, though, would be the actual words of Senator Bill Cassidy, the Republican senator from Louisiana, who said that the reason he changed his mind and he voted for the trial to proceed is because the House managers did an excellent job in presenting their case, and President Trump's legal team did not. They looked discombobulated. They didn't look like they were organized. So I will say the last thing I'll say, Melissa, which I do find a little bit frustrating, is I think that myself and probably most of your viewers would like our two U.S. senators to at least be open-minded to the evidence that's going to be presented. Now that this trial has taken place, I don't think it is unfair of us as Floridians to ask both of our senators to look at the trial. We've already had the vote. It's moving forward. Look on it and look at it based upon its merits. I don't think that that's an unrealistic or an ask that we should be afraid to make of our senators.
549-2937. Political tribalism being what it is, conviction in the Senate of former President Trump is very unlikely, as we know. And so given that, Daniel, how do you think the vote of these senators, particularly our Florida senators, Rick Scott and Marco Rubio, will impact their efforts to run again for reelection in a couple of years? How will that play in Florida?
Well, you know what, Melissa, if you look back at past impeachments, if you look at the, of course, when President Nixon was not impeached, however, there were three articles drafted in the Judiciary Committee and he resigned prior to the full House vote. If you look at the impeachment of Bill Clinton, which occurred in the later part of his second term, there were some short-term dings in terms of the party that was the impeachable party. You know, we know Bill Clinton, for example, left office with a very, very high approval rating for a president who had been impeached. But in 2000 and in 2004, the Republicans won the presidency both times and were picking up seats in the House and the Senate post 9/11. So if you're asking me, you know, is this going to have any kind of coattails moving forward? I think that they would probably be very, very brief. And I think that both Senator Rubio and Senator Scott both realize that despite the recent, bluing of Duval County here locally former Mayor Andrew Gillum and with Joe Biden winning Duval County, Florida remains a very, very, if not deepening, Republican state, right? President Trump beat Joe Biden by 4 percentage points. It was not close statewide. So I think that their calculus is that basically, you know, going with Team Red, doubling down on their commitment to their primary, to their base voters here in Florida, is going to be the right political calculation for them. And guess what? I don't think they're wrong.
We're talking about the second impeachment trial of former President Donald Trump. It will continue today, and you will be able to listen to it live on this radio station beginning in the noon hour, maybe around 1 o'clock. Things will really get going as we talk with Daniel Cronrath of FSCJ. Did you watch any of the impeachment evidence yesterday? What are your thoughts? It's 549-2937. Give us a call. Mark is in St. Augustine. Hi, Mark.
Hey, good morning. As far as the merits of with the current Trump impeachment, you know, I'm not necessarily against it or for it. If people think that there's merit to pursue this, then that's fine with me. But I guess the problem that I really have is and we see this on both sides of the aisle in Washington, is what I view as hypocrisy or the lack of consistency in argument. Over the past several years, there have been numerous examples of elected Democrat officials and their incendiary rhetoric that, you know, and I know numerous videos are going around with, Maxine Waters and other folks talking about getting their face and you disrupt them at dinner and that kind of thing. And we've seen where that has happened. But yet that seemed to be received with an approval almost. So if you think that if somebody thinks Trump did that and we need to pursue impeachment, that's fine. I'd be willing to listen to the argument. But if you turned your back on those previous examples and the very people who are trying this are guilty of those examples, then I have a very hard time taking that individual seriously.
All right, Mark. Daniel, what about the argument we've heard from Republicans that some Democrats have made incendiary remarks? What's your reaction to that?
Hey, Melissa, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, we accidentally lost you there for a minute.
Oh, no, that's no problem. Yeah, no, I think Mark makes a really good point, but I think it's more generally reflective of how heated our political rhetoric is. And I feel his position because a lot of the language was being used on both sides right now is very inflammatory. And it's really new relative to you know, 21st century politics within the last 4 or 5 years. Well, let's really go back to the election of President Obama. We've seen just an explosion of this kind of heated rhetoric. But what I would ask the caller to really examine here is, you know, Rep. Waters, instructing people to get in the face of their elected officials or something along those lines is an entirely different kettle of fish than having a mob of thousands of people gather at a pre-planned rally who are armed and then descending upon the Capitol with the President of the United States telling him that he will be with them by their side and tweeting out later in the day that Vice President Pence has committed treason. It's really kind of whataboutism in the degree that these are not, you know, or not what, but it's a logical fallacy that these are similar or like events. They're really, really different.
Well, if I could just jump in and say, and certainly the president was telling his supporters a lie. He was saying, fight for your country. The election has been stolen. It wasn't.
Yeah, no. And this is really, if you look at the events of January 6th, it's kind of just the natural finishing of an escalation of events. When you begin before an election telling people that if you lose, it's rigged, and then you begin by basically going through and trying to challenge the accurate election results in 4 contested states, continuing to tell your supporters that this has been stolen, this has been taken, culminating with a rally on January 6th to descend upon the Capitol. This is very, very different than, say, somebody going to the house of a senator in D.C. or somebody confronting Sarah Huckabee Sanders at dinner, which, by the way, I don't approve of either. But it's very, very different in scope and scale.
5492937. Carolina in Atlantic Beach. Hi, Carolina. Thanks for holding. Good morning to you.
Hey, good morning, Melissa. Thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate
your
program. And I just had a couple of comments. First of all, I so appreciate some of the words that your guest had mentioned when he said, you know, even when a person leaves their position, if they've done wrong, it is important for the next person or the next company to know what wrong they've done. In this case, I feel like I understand both sides that the election has passed, but this entire country was traumatized. The world was traumatized by this. I want to give you just an example of there in medicine. I'm a physician, but in medicine, there have been many, many, you know, cases where people, bad surgeons or bad players have done harm in one hospital or one institution or fired or were told to leave and it wasn't reported. They went on to other places to do more harm, to even kill people. So, you know, this there is blood on the hands of every person that's been complicit with this. Let's tell the truth. If they really thought this was a bad election, that it was stolen, then why wasn't it stolen from the same people that did win? I know too many people that decided that the top of the ticket was not going to be for them, but they were okay with having, you know, the differences and having a balanced Congress or a balanced Senate.
Yeah, I think you're right, Carolyn. Yeah, there were some ticket splitting for sure where down ballot Republicans got elected, but those same voters did not cast a ballot for Trump. You're right. So, Carolina, thank you so much for that. Thank you. Daniel Cronrath, the argument from Democrats is there can be no unity without accountability. They see the impeachment as enforcing accountability.
Yeah, and if that is what, you know, before, Melissa, you referred to the political tribalism that we're engaged in right now in the United States, and that really is the Democratic position, that there's really no way this country can heal forward, can move forward and can heal unless we first put to bed the matter of any possible crimes or grievances that were committed against our country. Of course, the Republican position is that this is just dragging out the inevitable. President Trump is now a resident in Florida. He's no longer in office. Why are we continuing to delay these proceedings? But I think the caller's right, and I think that Congressman Jamie Rankin made this case yesterday, okay? To simply say that an election's over, and then any sitting president of the United States is going to get some sort of grace period in between when they've lost the election and when they leave office, that they can basically take any action, is just it's inconceivable. And quite frankly, it defies any kind of logic, right? A president of the United States or any officer or any person in any position is responsible for their actions literally every day of their life. There's no kind of, yes, but you know what, there's no solution to this, there's no remedy to this. And frankly, it's constitutionally, we know there is a remedy, okay? Impeachment and the hearings are conducted so that these individuals, it's in the Constitution, they can no longer hold office again. President Trump has already publicly said he's interested in running in 2024. That's why this isn't just performative. This is the Democrats basically saying, no, you committed what we view to be high crimes and misdemeanors while you were in office, and we need to have this hearing.
Before I go back to quite a few of your calls, let me get a few of your social media comments on the air from our Facebook page. A listener writes, I'm thrilled Democrats have the courage to hold him accountable, considering the Republicans have none. Another comment, this is a travesty. The Democrats have been hate mongers against Trump since the day he was elected. Reflecting the partisan divide, here's a tweet from Mildred. Rubio and Scott have already made up their minds. Despite the facts clearly laid out by the impeachment managers, they are completely controlled by their fealty to Trump. That's all that matters to them, not what's right and just for the country. They are unfit for their jobs, she tweets. Jason tweets the show, what role does gerrymandering play in pushing the GOP further and further right? Daniel.
Yeah, Melissa, let me address one of those things, too, because the idea of Democrats hating President Trump, but President Trump not doing anything wrong, those aren't mutually exclusive things. Democrats can have a partisan rancor, almost what Republicans would view as like, a deep-seated hatred towards this president. That still does not forgive actions committed by the president, all right? We've seen what this president has done. There's evidence that's going to be brought to bear. This hearing should be all of our senators. I would encourage both of our Florida senators to look at the evidence, view it in real time, and then cast a vote based upon your convictions and what you've seen. I think just to simply say that all of this is just hatred towards President Trump is really just a way to gloss over what his actions were when he was in office.
Let's go to Daryl in St. Augustine. Daryl, thanks for holding so many calls from St. Augie today. St. Augustine, we see you down there. Thanks so much for listening. Go ahead, Daryl.
Yeah, I think it's pretty obvious that what the one thing the Republicans hate is democracy. When they lose a vote, they don't accept it. In the state of Florida, the only way that we can get anything done is through a constitutional amendment, and then the Republican Party does everything it can to not fulfill the constitutional approved vote of the people in Florida. From the Save Our Everglades to the legalization of medical marijuana, every single time they do nothing and until the people force them to. And unfortunately, when it's gotten so far that now in the, nationally, they basically refuse to do what the people vote to have them do. And Rubio and Scott are doing exactly what the people don't want done. So they just hate democracy is what the Republican Party represents to me.
All right. Daniel Cronrath, certainly critics of the rightward drift of the GOP have begun to see it as a white nationalist, far-right, authoritarian party, hostile to democracy, willing to overturn the results of a free and fair election. This has concerned political observers across the spectrum, by the way. And so how do we go forward with our system of government if a majority of Republicans want to install what critics say is a sort of minority rule.
Yeah, I think, Melissa, you know, if you look globally at the major political parties in the world which identify with being on the right of the ideological continuum, we see pockets of violent white national groups in many other countries aside just from the United States. And we can look at various places where this has taken place, from Italy to Brazil and a lot of other modern democracies who we consider to be peers. I think what really happened in the United States is I think that the Republican Party has had this fringe element in it. And I think we first identified it with the election of President Obama and the rise of the Tea Party. I think the one thing that stemmed the tide of it becoming very plain, and you'll remember this, is when then the late Senator John McCain literally pushed back at a woman when he was running for president who had said that President Obama was a Muslim. And you'll remember at the time, Senator McCain responded, no, he's a good, family, decent man who I just have a difference of opinion with.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
At that time, McCain was making the very statesmanlike decision not to weaponize the hate and the fear, which was obviously coming up from a small part of the Republican Party. But let's be honest, it's the most vocal part. It's the most adamant part. The Proud Boys and some of these other very, very right-wing organizations are also given, I think, a disproportionately a large microphone by our news media, and for good reason, okay? So anyway, I think that what you've seen really, I think that this has always been here, this tinge, Melissa, but I think you saw Donald Trump's willingness to weaponize these folks and to turn it into a political tool for him in order to remain in office.
And I guess my question to you is more of an existential one. If many, many millions of Americans still believe incorrectly that the election was stolen, that's not good for the health of this democracy.
Yeah, no, it's really not. There have been international agencies which have criticized the way that the United States conducts elections, Melissa, because we have a very, very decentralized election system. But then at the same time, because if you look at the state of Florida, you know, we have 67 duly elected supervisors of elections who it's their job, it's their charge. They have
and let's point out, though, a lot of those folks around the country have been heroes. They have stuck to their guns, and they have, in the face of a lot of pressure and death threats and other, hostilities, they've certified the results.
Just look for your listeners in Georgia and think about how the backlash. I mean, Governor Kemp was one of President Trump's biggest supporters until he actually did his job, and now he's finding himself on the outside looking in when he's one of the most right-wing members of his party in the state.
549-2937. Let's take a few more calls on impeachment. Sally in another St. Augustine caller. Hi, Sally. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. I have a question or a point. Let's just say that a line cannot be drawn from Trump's speech to the riot, insurrection. But what about the hours that happened after that where no additional help was called? Unless I'm missing that part of it in the reporting. So basically that's it.
Okay, thanks, Sally. Let's take John in St. Augustine. Hi, John. Thanks for holding. Go ahead,
John.
How
you doing, Ms. Melissa?
All right, thanks.
Hello?
Yep, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
Yes, ma'am. Well, my concern is this here. We have been watching over the past 20 years. When Obama became president, all of a sudden everybody was like, oh, the Republican Party. All of a sudden, the Tea Party came up. And the Tea Party came up, and we started to realize that the Tea Party was the base of the Republican Party. And then the Tea Party started all with the racist tropes and the pictures and all of this. Then the Republican Party started just going against America, just like one of the callers said, that, you know, we've been watching this. Now, with Donald Trump is guilty, okay? And America would have never had to go through this if the Republican Party would have did their duty and their due diligence in the first impeachment. But they didn't. They coddled him. And when they coddled him like a little baby, that emboldened him. And then Marco Rubio, Rutherford, and Scott, these senators knew very well that the vote was not stolen and everything, and still wanted to go against democracy. The problem is, Miss Melissa, is that the party, or the Republican Party, have been going further and further and further to the right instead of the center of the aisle. Same thing on the Democrat. We got a leftist movement. But as you see with Obama, he tried to rule from the center. Biden, he's going to try to rule from the center. But how can you have bipartisanship when you have a party that allowed the COVID to spread expeditiously? Now we got emails saying that, oh, this is what they wanted. They wanted herd immunity and everything. And now we got all these cases. And now you saying, oh, well, it's okay, this and that. What are you going to tell your children about right and wrong? What are you going to tell your children that, hey, if you be president, you can do anything you want to. You can darn near come close to destroying America more than any Muslim attack, any Chinese attack, anything. They came within 6 feet of destroying America. And now we have these senators sitting up here trying to find a way to not prosecute. I'm a rule of law. I'm a person about rule of law, okay? And if we do not do what is right for what we've seen happen to the capital of the United States of America, listen, what you're showing our enemies?
John.
We can get inside and we can destroy America. So we got to have accountability so that
America's
word and their morale can stand in the world.
And thank you, John. An impassioned argument from John in St. Augustine calling for accountability of former President Trump. I want to thank you for that. By the way, I want to point this out too, Daniel. When we were talking earlier about white nationalism on the right, listeners emailing me to remind me that Trump increased the number of votes from African Americans and Hispanics across the country, particularly in Florida. I just wanted to point that out, that it was a complex picture with our vote in Florida as we kind of center the discussion on Florida. But let me close, Daniel, with your final thoughts about this and remind people to tune in to 89.9 today and going forward. We will continue to have live coverage of the impeachment proceedings. But Daniel, your final thoughts.
Yeah, Melissa, I think my final thought is going to be this. I do think that the one strategic error that the Democrats have made, and I understand their desire to get along with President Biden's agenda for the country, to address the pandemic, to address income inequality, which is occurring, all of these things merit our attention. However, Melissa, I think that the rushed nature and the desire to try to get this trial done by next week, while we still have mountains of evidence being collected and pouring in, we don't even know the extent of any culpability yet. And I think at the end of the day, Melissa, when we actually get down to it, to investigating the actions of sitting members of Congress who were communicating with people in the crowd, letting them know where to go inside the Capitol building while these events are occurring. I wish that we had the luxury of letting this all unfold in a greater period of time with genuine investigations taking place at the committee level, like we would do if this was Benghazi or any other kind of select committee to investigate something. But that being said, Melissa, I think it's very important that the American people watch this week. I think it's important we have school children watch this as much as we can, because this is history unfolding right in front of us.
It really is. So I really do encourage everyone to watch or listen to the radio today as we carry live via NPR the impeachment hearings. And I want to thank you, Daniel Cronreth, FSCJ. Always appreciate your insights.
Oh, thank you, Melissa.
All right, a quick break and much more coming up later. Some good news for your Wednesday, but up next.
We are quite shocked to hear that our ancestor is being dragged into the mud.
Descendants in France of Jean Ribault speak out about the renaming of two local schools. We'll be right back. It's the biggest stories affecting the Sunshine State. Hi, I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Join us Friday for the Florida Roundup.
Each week at noon, we interview newsmakers and people from across the state discussing the stories and issues that affect your life. What's driving the conversation in Florida?
Join the conversation on the Florida Roundup.
Every Friday at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
Escape to a world of British telly on BritBox and PBS Passport when you become a supporter of WJCT. Sign up at jacksbundle.com today.
Welcome back. Well, the names of nine Duval County public schools are undergoing review as the school board discusses controversial historical figures the schools are named after. Now, six of the schools under consideration for renaming honor Confederate leaders, and the other schools are named after leaders who some historians say perpetrated violence against Native Americans. Here are the names of the schools under consideration: Joseph Finnegan Elementary, Stonewall Jackson Elementary, Jefferson Davis Middle School, Kirby Smith Middle School, Jeb Stuart Middle School, Lee High, Jackson High, and Jean Ribault High and Jean Ribault Middle School. But here's the thing. Last week I spoke about the proposed school renamings with a direct descendant of Jean Ribault. Yves de Molchoy called me from his home in Lyon, France. He says his ancestor, Ribault, never mistreated Native populations here in North Florida. And he thinks the school board should leave the Ribault names in place. Here's that conversation. Yves, good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Well, Melissa, thanks for having me on the show.
So you called us up all the way from Lyon in the southeast of France to talk about something happening half a world away. Discussions about renaming some schools in Jacksonville. It's interesting that you are more closely tied to this than people might realize, because you're one of the descendants of Jean Ribault, who was the first to settle this area. So why did you decide to get involved in this matter?
Well, we, and by that I mean cousins and myself, other descendants and Jean Ribault, are quite shocked to hear that our ancestor is being, let's say, dragged into the mud. There is a reason why this school renaming processes happen, usually because people after which the schools are named are getting bad reputation for various reasons, usually due to slavery or other, I would say, historical purposes. And we feel that Jean Ribault has been amalgamated with the with others, where it has absolutely nothing to do with that. So we actually want to make it clear that Jean Ribault was not a slave owner, a slave trader, didn't persecute the Native Americans when he came to Florida, and actually contributed probably greatly to the friendship between our nations.
Okay, so as the Duval County School Board looks at this, and they're considering renaming schools, several schools, because of the names are tied to the killings of Native Americans. Let's be clear about that. Jean Ribault High and Ribault Middle were named, of course, after your ancestor who first came to North Florida in the 1500s. So you disagree then with the research they're citing that Ribault was in part responsible for the marginalizing of indigenous people?
Absolutely disagree with that. When Jean Ribault came to Florida in 1562, he actually approached the Native American, the Tinicua tribe, is by remember the name correctly. And he established a friendly relationship with them. They helped him find the proper location to establish the first settlement, the first fort. And then, as happened, Jean Ribault's mission was actually a short one. He came he came to Florida to find a place as a refuge for the French Huguenots, where we were persecuted because of their religion. And then he went back to Europe to report on the fact that he had found a great location. Unfortunately, he came back to Europe in the middle of the religion war, and he was actually in prison in London for a few years. So 2 years after, in 1564, it's actually another captain, René de Laudonnière, who came to came back to Florida, this time with the settlers. And they were actually welcomed with open arms by the Native Americans, probably a pretty significant proof that the first expedition from Jean Ribault had not left any kind of bad or bitter memory from the Indians.
Yeah. Local experts on colonial history have said much the same, that Ribault, you know, and the Huguenots, they sailed to the mouth of the St. John's River. They met up with the Native American population, that he was actually only in this area for a few days. He didn't spend a lot of time here. So let me ask you then, why is this important to you and some of the other descendants of Ribault? What goes on all the way over here in Florida, it's still personal, it sounds like, for you. This means a lot to you and your family members that his name stay on these schools.
Absolutely. Well, Ribault was the maiden name of my maternal grandmother. I still have cousins who are named Ribault, and even though I carry a different name because it comes from my mother's side, we feel very attached to our history and very proud to the fact that Jean Ribault was the first European settler, at least the first Frenchman, to land in Florida. I personally visited Jacksonville 6 years ago, and I was extremely excited to see all the places that are named after Jean Ribault. Of course, the two schools, the river, the ferry that's named after him. I believe a couple streets are also named after him. So it was actually pretty good to see that our ancestor had left such memories to the American people.
It's really fascinating to get your perspective as a Frenchman watching this from afar. I want to thank you, and we'll follow this story because no decision's been made, but thanks for your insights, Yves. It's great to talk to you.
Melissa, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity.
I should say merci. Have a great day. Well, it is the first retrospective study of its kind to focus on women 70 and older who have triple negative breast cancer. The result, chemotherapy, despite its downsides, works. I spoke with the study's lead author here in Jacksonville, Jennifer Crozier, MD, breast medical oncologist, and she's also director of breast cancer research at Baptist MD Anderson Cancer Center. Dr. Crozier, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us about this new study. You looked at whether chemotherapy for older women with triple negative breast cancer is worth the risk. What did you find?
Correct. Yeah, so we wanted to do a study looking at a really clinically relevant question about a more aggressive type of breast cancer, triple negative breast cancer, and specifically in women age 70 or older. Historically, we've had to kind of extrapolate this data from younger women who have been involved in large prospective clinical trials in the U.S., and it's unlikely these are going to be performed in women over the age of 70. So in this study, we're able to look back at 16,000 women, over 16,000 women across the U.S. that were age 70 or older, and see how they did with or without chemotherapy. And we were able to divide people actually into three categories. Women who received chemotherapy had a significant improvement in their survival, 68.5%, compared to women who were recommended to receive chemotherapy but ended up declining. Their five-year overall survival was 61.1%. And those women who were not recommended and not given chemotherapy had the lowest survival, 53.7%. So this really provided us some data that there's a benefit to chemotherapy in triple-negative breast cancer, even in our older women.
This is interesting to look at because, of course, chemotherapy is one of the most effective modalities for treating breast cancer, but of course it has a lot of side effects and they're very unpleasant. And chemotherapy reduces our immunity, among other things. So is it your hope that this study will encourage older breast cancer patients to take a deep breath and go ahead with chemo because it's the best form of treatment that we have right now, even though it's certainly not a perfect one?
Exactly right. Yeah, there are potential side effects. The good part is it's come a long way, you know, even in the last few years as far as medications to help treat side effects or protect the immune system during chemotherapy, making it more tolerable overall. It's still a difficult time period when you're on chemotherapy, of course. And what plays an important role as well is kind of the social support you have at home. But definitely need to consider chemotherapy as part of kind of a joint decision-making with your physician. We always respect the patient's decision and their autonomy. But kind of bringing these this data into play and seeing how that affects patients and their treatment decisions, and we're just providing them more information that there is a survival benefit if we can kind of get through this short, sometimes unpleasant period of chemotherapy more long-term with their overall survival.
Now, you looked at this with one specific type of triple-negative breast cancer. What are the implications for other kinds of breast cancer and chemo?
Correct. So we have a lot more data on other types of breast cancer that's more estrogen-driven, where we're using less and less chemotherapy. We're de-escalating therapy there, using more endocrine therapy. And we know a lot more about that with the genomics of tumors, different things. We're able to risk stratify patients better. Triple-negative breast cancer, this type of breast cancer we analyze, is a more aggressive type. The only real treatment currently for stage 1 through 3 breast cancer is chemotherapy. So it's a big decision if we're going to be doing no therapy or chemotherapy. And that's where this data helps us to make that decision together.
The bottom line, though, is women and men, by the way, men who also get breast cancer, they just need to discuss all their options with their doctor.
Correct, exactly right. And kind of what is their risk specifically as best as we can get it, and what's their potential benefit of chemotherapy? And hopefully this data can help guide people in their decisions.
Thank you so much, Doctor. She's Dr. Jennifer Crozier, breast medical oncologist, director of breast cancer research at Baptist MD Anderson Cancer Center in Jacksonville. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. In a moment, some good news. It's our What's Good Wednesday, the Valentine's Day edition. So stick around. We'll be right back.
Congarean Pen, dedicated to agriculture and culinary endeavors, offering field-to-fork dining and outdoor experiences on over 300 acres. Sip, dine, explore. Information at congareeandpen.com. Announcing Vickers Landing at Oak Bridge, bridging retirees with an all-new Ponte Vedra Beach community, featuring new homes, a resort lifestyle, and a life plan for every stage of aging. Information at vickerslanding.com.
This would create a brand new January exception to the Constitution.
This idea of a January amnesty is nonsense.
The Senate affirmed the constitutionality of an impeachment trial for a former president. Now each side presents its opening arguments. Join us for day two of the Senate impeachment trial of Donald Trump from NPR News.
Today at noon on WJCT News 89.9. All right, picture this. You've gotten your COVID vaccine, you're feeling good, and then your fiance asks you this.
Are you going to go to Hawaii without me? That's the question.
I might, yeah. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Will he or won't he? Next time on Marketplace.
Tonight at 6, here on WJCT News 89.9.
The first census to include Black Americans by name was in 1870, 5 years after slavery officially ended. How can we celebrate Black history when so much has been intentionally left out of the public record? Writers from the Atlantic's Inheritance Project join us to talk about their effort to restore Black American narratives to our nation's collective history. Next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, Valentine's Day is Sunday. Will you be enjoying a romantic dinner with your sweetheart? Maybe having some chocolates? However you enjoy this romantic weekend, we hope you're safe, happy, and healthy. Every Wednesday on the show, we take a moment to give thanks for the good things happening across this community, despite all of the challenges we're dealing with right now. So let's dive into our What's Good Wednesdays, beginning with... Hey, how about this? Beach Bowl is back. This is amazing. The Board of Adjustments for Jacksonville Beach has approved a $7.5 million renovation and expansion of the iconic Beach Bowl, which has been around since 1958. And it's one of our producer Heather Schatz's favorite hangouts. So she's very happy about this. Now, Beach Bowl closed pretty abruptly a couple of years ago when the property owners didn't renew the lease, but local representatives out there say the original sign is going back. It will be improved. They're even going to put in a restaurant with rooftop dining. Jacksonville Beach Mayor Chris Hoffman will join us tomorrow morning on the show to tell us all about this and several other projects that are keeping Jack's Beach on the rise. So you can get back to bowling there pretty soon. Are you looking for work? More than 20 employers throughout the region are taking part in a virtual hiring event tomorrow. This is sponsored by Career Source Northeast Florida. Tomorrow from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., go to their website, Career Source Northeast Florida. To take part in this, you can speak with representatives from a variety of industries and get your resume in. Girls Run the World, Humana, a leading health and well-being company in Duval County, is teaming with Girls Inc. of Jacksonville to provide an after-school healthy living program for girls in grades 9 through 12, and this is happening at Title I schools in the area. Now, the academic enrichment course seeks to increase young girls' understanding of health issues affecting them and help them develop the motivation and practical skills to take charge of their health today and throughout their lives. This is part of Humana Medicaid's community engagement program, and they're offering this through Girls Inc. of Jacks at Ed White High School, Sandalwood High School, and Raines High School. If you want to learn more about the Healthy Living After School program, go to girlsincjacks.org. We love Girls Inc. They are actually in our building here at WJCT Studios up on the second floor. Again, girlsincjacks.org. Okay, hundreds of families and supporters across the country took part in the 12th annual Wolfson Children's Challenge Virtual Edition. They were celebrating former patients of Wolfson Children's and raising funds for life-saving care. About 400 kids and families from across 15 states took part in this virtual challenge. They logged 1,532.83 kilometers of physical activity on the Wolfson 55 app last month, and they raised more than $96,000 to help fund the purchase of life-saving trauma equipment and technology for our most critical patients at Wolfson Children's Hospital. Now, to date, the Wolfson Children's Challenge has raised more than $4 million for their endowment, and this is going to fund life-saving equipment and technology for the young patients who need it most. This year, the endowment, they're telling us, will focus on the development of an MIBG therapy room on the oncology floor of Wolfson Children's. This is the first of its kind for Florida, they say, and it will give Wolfson Children's the ability to offer the newest upfront treatment for kids with high-RASC neuroblastoma. That is the most common solid tumor of childhood cancer. So there you go, you know, some good news for your week. We do this every Wednesday. And we decided to start doing this just because, I mean, let's face it, we're going through a terrible time right now. We're in the middle of a pandemic. People are out of work. People are worried about their how they're going to pay the rent or the mortgage, how they're going to feed their families, how they're going to avoid the virus. So every Wednesday, we do What's Good Wednesdays on the radio. And we also send out an e-newsletter. It'll be going out today around noon. You can subscribe to that right on our website. And some more good news. I want to mention this quickly. As we mentioned at the top of the hour, more vaccination sites are opening up around the community. Southeastern Grocers is going to begin offering free Moderna vaccinations tomorrow at some Winn-Dixie and Harvey's stores. Walmart stores are also this week going to start offering vaccinations. This is in addition to all of the current vaccination sites that we are already taking advantage of around the area. And apparently Publix is going to open up some more vaccination sites in Duval County. They're already offering that in some of the surrounding counties. There's more news about the vaccination opportunities at our website. If you go to wjct.org, you can get the very latest information. And, you know, if you're having trouble getting an appointment, we try to help people where we can, especially for seniors who don't have internet access. Just send us an email. Well, actually, you might not have internet access to do that. You know what? Give me a call at 358-6382 if you are having trouble finding an appointment to be vaccinated. And there's your good news for the week. That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Josh Torres is show director, with news director Jessica Palumbo, and Bill Bortsfield is our digital editor. Make sure to listen today as we continue with live coverage of the impeachment proceedings in Washington. You can hear that here on 89.9. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect on WJCT News, 89.9 Jacksonville. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.